The Sunday Show on 100 to 102 Today FM.
Do you remember the 90s?
Yeah.
You know, people were talking about getting piercings and getting tribal tattoos.
Yeah.
And people were singing about saving the planet and forming bands.
Yeah.
There's a place where that idea still exists as a reality, and I've been there.
Where is it?
Portland.
Oregon?
Yeah. Dream of the 90s is alive. Portland, Portland, Portland.
Dream of the 90s is alive. Well, the dream of the 90s is also alive in Dublin and Paris and London. In fact, all over the world. Yes, everything 90s is back in vogue. Well, apart from maybe the Spice Girls and Ally McBeal, but lots of other 90s phenomena are back. Blur, the X-Files, and we may even have a Clinton in the White House in the not too distant future. Here to talk to us about how the 90s are the new 80s is John Martin, Irish independent journalist and music critic. John, thanks for joining us on the Sunday Show.
Glad to.
So the 90s have slowly becoming more fashionable in music and TV in particular, but they really have us in their hold now.
They do. I mean, if you look at Blur, this is the first time since 97 that the four members are back together making music. New album out next month. In recent years, you've had lots of bands that came of age in the 90s coming back. Stone Roses, admittedly the first album's 1989, but it seeped very much into the early 90s. They played here a couple of years ago when Spiral Carpets were back, My Bloody Valentine returned. There were moments where you went to festivals and you thought, have I been magically returned to 95 or 96? Mm-hmm. What is happening to contemporary music? Why are all these acts doing so well again? What's interesting, though, is when I look at nostalgia, it seems to be that it comes in cycles of both 20 years and 40 years. So I'm seeing a lot of kind of flares out there when you look at fashion, but I'm also seeing a lot of ripped jeans around the knees, which is very 90s, and a throwback from grunge and all of that. But we're absolutely back in the 90s when it comes to music.
Okay, and so Blur have this new album that's coming out, as you were mentioning there, and they're headlining at festivals. What about their great rivals back in the day, were Oasis?
Well, if you look at Noel Gallagher, he has an album with his new band called Chasing Yesterday, and it is the best-selling album in Britain this year so far, which is surprising because it's not the best album he's ever done. It's certainly not the best album of the year, but it is a throwback to early Oasis, and in fact, one of the songs on it was written for Definitely Maybe, but didn't make the cut. So there is a return to that kind of Britpop sound. As a pure aside, I was very interested to note that Loaded magazine is finishing. Now that started in the mid-90s. But the culture it promoted, that lad culture, has been in the news so much of late when you think of somebody like Jeremy Clarkson. And even if you look at the behaviour of people online, it's very much that kind of 90s kind of laddishness, if you like, that boorishness, which seemed to fade away completely last decade. I mean, it was all about new age men, metrosexuals, all that kind of thing. So there are loads of different echoes of that
kind
decade.
Of foul-mouthed tirades and that kind of stuff. Yeah. Check on your headphones there, because I want you to listen to this clip from back in the day, and this is Noel Gallagher talking about Damon Albarn of Blur.
If you've got the time to sit down and worry about American culture creeping into British society, then I would get a proper fucking job. You know, other people are too busy trying to make a living. He's such a condescending c**t, isn't he, you know? Oh, f**k, I wrote this album so I could stop American culture coming to Britain. F**king way.
So there you go. And it might all start off again now that the two of them are...
What's interesting is he's completely changed his tune on Damon Albarn. I interviewed him myself some years ago, and he said that he actually likes him. They meet. He's got a hell of a lot of time for him. He admits that a lot of the rivalry in the mid-90s was manufactured by both bands and their record companies. Mm. And people loved it. It was on the 9 o'clock news on BBC. It was item number three, you know, when they were going to war over their respective second album. Well, it was Oasis' second album and Blur's fourth album, I think. But they get on like a house on fire now. But it is interesting to note that 20 years on, one of them has a UK number one album, and the other, Albarn, almost certainly will have a UK number one album in the next few weeks.
So we're talking Britpop there, but in the States at the time, it was all Seattle and Portland and grunge.
It was. I mean, early 90s. I mean, I my own coming of age, if you like, coincided beautifully with Nirvana, with Pearl Jam, Lemonheads, bands like that. And in the next 3 weeks, there is a feature-length documentary coming out on the late Kurt Cobain, which I've heard is really special. Getting a proper sense of the man. I think that music certainly echoes on today. There are some bands that unquestionably have been inspired by that time. If you look at all the lumberjack shirts that continue to populate our streets, I think grunge has made a comeback in fashion as well. But that was very much a pivotal point in American music. What's really interesting, though, when you look at the 1990s is, over the course of any decade, how much change there is. And if you look at the early part of the decade, that period around grunge, it essentially was a time before the internet. I mean, I started college in 1993, and we had a lecturer trying to explain to us what the World Wide Web was. Now, we have obviously changed enormously in that period of time. But by the end of the 90s, most people had mobile phones. The net was accepted and part of our lives. So an awful lot happened in that period. And it's funny how dated some of it is. I mean, one of the shows I loved from the 90s was This Life. And I looked at it again recently. I looked at sections of it, and I thought that looks so old-fashioned. And yet, at the time, it looked so cool and London and, you know, just everything about it was so perfect. And now it's like, that looks incredibly dated.
Well, it's interesting you talk about TV programmes there, because of course during this week it was announced that The X-Files is going to return to our screens, and that it's unsolved cases from the drama, the TV series. Were you a fan? I didn't really get into it that much.
X-Files at all, really? I have to say.
The paranormal isn't your thing.
Yeah, it was one of those 90s shows that I never got into. I did, however, adore Twin Peaks, and that is being not remade but reimagined again by David Lynch, and that will appear next year. I mean, if you go back to X-Files, Gillian Anderson has had a really interesting innings of late. When you look at The Fall and Jamie Dornan, she's very much in the frame again.
So do you think it's more to do with that they see
possibly
her as being saleable?
I think she's saleable again. There's certainly an element of that. But listen, just because I didn't like it and you don't seem to have liked it doesn't mean that it wasn't hugely popular, and it was. I suppose it's one of those things a bit like Friends I never really got. I could see that people loved it, but it just wasn't for me.
Do you know what it comes down to? It comes down to, was it Blur versus Oasis? Was it Friends versus Seinfeld? Was it X-Files versus Twin Peaks?
Yeah, and Seinfeld has to win on those two.
I'm with you on that 100%. But Twin Peaks, will that work? I want to play a clip of Kyle MacLachlan, aka Agent Dale Cooper, from the original series.
The true test of any hotel, as you well know, Diane, is that morning cup of coffee, which I'll be getting back to you about within a half hour. Diane, it struck me again earlier this morning. There are two things that continue to trouble me, and I'm speaking now not only as an agent of the Bureau, but also as a human being. What really went on between Marilyn Monroe and the Kennedys? And who really pulled the trigger on JFK?
So there you have it, Kyle MacLachlan. I think he's going to be in the new series.
So I believe. Yeah. I mean, it was so redolent of the early 90s, and Julie Christie's song, the theme song, still is very evocative. I'm not sure, though, it will work.
But he's revisiting the same people 20 years on their lives have panned out.
True, but don't forget that David Lynch was somebody that had the germ of a brilliant idea, and it started off being incredibly good, and then got very weird and quite poor in many respects. I mean, if I'm honest, I think towards the end it just had lost the run of itself completely. But it did come at least 20 years before the likes of The Killing, where you've got sustained drama over 20 episodes. I mean, that was quite unusual back in the early 90s, and it's very common in today's television. What's also interesting, though, is if you look at something like Netflix, just how much 90s content is up there. And as I'm constantly aware, living with my good wife, Friends seems to be on all the time. any hour of the day you flick, and some station has it, so that's endured.
But you bring up Netflix there, and House of Cards, the huge Netflix success, is actually a remake of a 90s BBC drama.
That's absolutely correct, a four-part series from 1990. Now I think the Kevin Spacey remake has just taken on an entire world of its own and has become a global success. But looking back to the British original, and there are remarkable similarities, of course, because it is a remake, but in its own right, brilliant drama.
It is, and actually I have a clip of it, and this is Ian Richardson, who plays the part of Tory Chief Whip Frank Urquhart in the BBC miniseries.
Not feeling guilty, I hope. If you have pangs of pity, crush them now. Grind them under your heel like old cigar butts. I've done the country a favour. He didn't have the brain or the heart or the stomach to rule a country like Great Britain. A nice enough man, but there was no bottom to him. His deepest need was that people should like him. An admirable trait, that, in a spaniel or a whore.
Well, there you go. That was Ian Richardson making Frank Underwood, Kevin Spacey, sound a bit like a pussycat.
And what an achievement that is.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary miniseries when you look back at it. It's fantastic. But listen, we're kind of running out of time here. So if I could get you to pick a track or a band that for you kind of consolidate what the 90s in Ireland, maybe, because I don't know how much influence all the grunge stuff had here. I suppose it was pretty big, but who would it be? What band would you like to listen to?
An Irish band?
Well, no, not an Irish band. Like, okay. What were people listening to here? What would you like? What would you like us to play out?
Well, Pulp really for me was incredibly special. One of the most intelligent bands of that era, and their music still sounds great.
Yeah, and Jarvis Cocker says that they are not ruling out a reunion, which is good to hear. Okay, well, that's all we have time for. Thanks for listening, and thanks also to my producer Tom Swift, to broadcast assistant Charlotte Flood, and to engineer Steve McClune here at Pulp.